Today's theme will be focusing on farm health and safety, but looking specifically at the role of technology and mechanization. And we'll look closely at how various advancements have taken place in the field, excuse the pun, and how those things have reshaped the landscape for farmers too as well. And also offer some reflections on how things have advanced over the years and decades. So just before I introduce the panel, just some housekeeping points. So we encourage all attendees to share your reflections, your observations, and any questions that you have as the session gets underway. You'll notice the chat function at the bottom of your screen. And also just conscious too as well, that there's probably not a farm family or community that haven't been affected, by machinery incidents on the farm. So I'd just like us to be just conscious of each other when we're sharing material too as well. And we'll just kind of look out for each other as we explore this topic. So without further ado, I'll introduce the panelists. So first of all, we have Dr. Aaron Yoder, who is an associate professor at the University of Nebraska Medical Center and Nebraska Extension. He works with the Central State Center for Agricultural Safety and Health and serves on the board of Agricultural Safety and Health Council of America. And he also grew up on a beef farm in Pennsylvania and holds a degree from both Penn State and Purdue University. We've Eric Merrill, who is an agricultural safety educator here with us at the New York Center for Agricultural Medicine and Health, and he's also a trained paramedic. He brings frontline experience to farm safety training with a focus on risk tied to mechanized equipment. Eric is passionate about promoting health and safety in rural communities with years of applied practice in the area. And finally, we've Marianne Robinson, who grew up on a small family farm in Delaware County. She now serves as the business administrator at Sunnyside Farms in Cayuga County. In her role, she oversees administrative operations for a team of more than 70 employees and manages the farm's compliance with FARM and agricultural safety programs. And she brings a wealth of experience from both large and small-scale operations. So guys, you're very, very welcome. We were chatting there earlier. So I arrived here, I started my job here in at the center last year. And since I've arrived, I'm always taken by how small the farming community is here. And we also realized when we put the panelists together that Aaron here had run a workshop at Sunnyside Farms. Aaron, who's originally from Pennsylvania and working in Nebraska, had run a workshop in Marianne's farm. In Sunnyside. Aaron, I might just come to you first if you don't mind. And I don't know if you want to just start by maybe you obviously grew up in a beef farm, you've experienced a whole a lot of changes in the industry. Could you just give us I suppose a little oversight about where we are today with mechanization, how things have changed and the positive impacts maybe that surround that.
Yeah, so mechanization is something I've always been familiar with. I always like tinkering and tearing things apart and putting them back together on the farm. And that's built a lot of the skill sets that I have and that I'm trying to pass on to my kids with their high mileage used cars. But as growing up in the farming community, I didn't realize we talk a lot about safety culture and farm safety. The farm I grew up on, my grandparents were coal miners. And coal miners had a lot of safety laws and regulations they had to follow. And I never realized it till I got in the field of farm safety and health that all the mechanical safety, machinery safety, and safety habits that they were trying to pound into me
Nice.
Probably came from their mining exposures. And it may have been one of the safer farms I've ever been on because that culture of safety that they carried from the mining industry into their farming operations. So that played a huge role when it came to machinery safety, about where we stood, what we did around machinery, that we understood how it functioned. And, one of the big takeaways that I always got was the don't expect that the operator sees you. So stay a certain distance away, stay away from the machinery. With that said, machinery keeps getting safer and safer as we go throughout the years. Things like roll bars, we had some tractors that were unprotected without roll bars. Now seats and suspension, seat belts, just everything that they have, all the safety mechanisms when we do maintenance on them. So the evolution of mechanization started off pretty crudely, I would say, with some of the tools that we used, but now we're designing very safe very useful equipment that helps save our bodies when we use that to do the work instead of us. So right. I'll stop there for now. I have a lot more to say, but that'll be
an
introduction into it anyway.
And a fantastic way to introduce it. Eric, I might come to you next because, you know, you deal with a lot of the kind of transfer of knowledge, I suppose, from a lot of like Aaron's side of work to the very much so applied side of things. Have you seen like much of like a cultural transition in how people relate to farm health and safety and their kind of interest in the area? And how do you find like that has evolved, I suppose, over time?
So some different things that I've seen is kind of to go with what Aaron said, machinery's getting a lot safer, but machinery's also really, really expensive. In some of my teaching, we do the farm medic program. We actually went to an ag dealership and we were talking to the owner of the dealership and he was saying, you know, a lot of farms, the machinery safety, so yes, there's less machinery related incidents because the farms are training certain, only a few people on the farm to operate that $400,000-$500,000 piece of equipment.
Right.
So they're, you know, I know somebody, they bought a chopper. They went to the Crone School in Tennessee and learned how to use it. But I think too, you know, if we can get to like the younger generations, they have a more safety mindset with them, especially the kids. Like you do a program, safety program with kids, they bring some of that home and kind of make their parents aware. I mean, there was stuff that before I got into this growing up on a farm, I mean, I rode on the fender of the tractor. I did, but now looking back on it, that wasn't the safest thing to do. And, you know, we're telling people not to do that. You know, and I found out after the fact, after I got married, that there was a farm in my community where the farmer ran over and his own son and killed him and right. It basically ruined his farming career. But my parents got me sheltered from that and I didn't know about that, you know, growing up. And it was just kind of like, wow, it really hits home in the fact. I mean, what I see too is, I mean, obviously we know if equipment still works, they're going to keep using it on the farm regardless of age.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I see too, with, you know, the manufacturers, I know like the veterinary industry is driving a lot with like having people get squeeze chutes. So, you know, with working with NICAM and going out to the farms for the John May Safety Fund, you know, there's a lot of people that are mindset and even going out and talking to farmers about different things. It's like, hey, you know, they work around the equipment day in, day out, and they don't realize that, hey, there's a safety concern here until somebody brings it to their attention, or sometimes they recognize, yeah, I know I need to get that taken care of.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, so just on that point then, Mariana, you come from really interesting perspectives. Obviously, you know, growing up on a more smaller scale family farm in Delaware County, now working in Cayuga County in a much bigger operation with employees and stuff like that. I'm just wondering, like, do you see this as the much more acceptability around it, or is farm health and safety and the advancements of it, is it still like pushing a boulder up a hill to get things, for want of a better term?
Well, I think in the last 10 years, we've made huge strides as an industry. And I know we have humbly there's always going to be room to improve on things, but I remember doing this is a million years ago, but I did a farm safety poster contest for NICAM when I was a kid and drew a picture of a tractor rollover accident, you know, and it was kind of how NICAM's outreach to kids helped start that ball rolling. And now we're looking at, you know, training 70 people, and a lot of farms have employees. Even a small farm may have one or two people who work for them. And I think we've made huge strides. You know, technology, obviously a huge help in efficiencies, and to the point on the bigger equipment, not only, you know, are you training less people to be, you know, better trained on that specific piece, but you also have less people. So because the equipment's a little bigger, you may have one tractor doing the work that three or four tractors had to do to get the same efficiencies. So kind of that growth and economies of scale and efficiencies and technology, I think it's helped the industry as a whole. And on the cattle handling, anybody who's moved cows knows that it's a a test of safety, patience, cattle, animal welfare concerns, and good cattle handling systems have made a huge difference. You can almost do some things that used to be really challenging. You can almost do them easy-ish, in a safe way for the human and the cow. So some of the things just make sense. I do want to be sensitive to the growth, and how, access to some of the material, the larger equipment and the cattle handling systems. It's not perfect and can be costly. But if there's lots of resources, even information on how to do things easier, I think we've made a lot of strides, recently.
That makes a lot of sense. I want to get back to that point about the strides that we made and how that has shaped the landscape for kind of everyone. Has it made it more inclusive or has it made it kind of more exclusive? It could be an argument for that within health and safety. But Aaron, just like one of the main purposes of this work is to try and bridge the gaps between, research, practice and policy and these kind of things. And from your side of things, working with data and how data informs the field. Where do you think that is at, or if you were to explain to somebody, to a farmer about how this makes a tangible impact to their lives, how would you respond to that?
Yeah, so I've always been more on the applied side of research than the basic research. I started off my career doing a lot of injury surveillance, looking at death certificates, finding out how people were being injured. How can we create programming that adapts to the injuries we're seeing out there? And traditionally, we would do that 20 years ago by newspaper clippings and other things like that to get some of the injury data to base our programming on. So that type of research, my engineering background, we also do research with the machinery. ROPS is a great example of that, or the roll bars on tractors and how they progress throughout the years. But just other technologies like auto guidance in tractors, and it takes some research to develop those things. But then myself as a safety and health researcher, I try to look at how that impacts people's maybe stress, their work days, how much time goes into it. And then I can encourage people to use the technologies that we found to be safer and healthier. And I'm really excited about some of the new technologies with AI. And every time I talk to agricultural people, artificial intelligence, not artificial insemination. When I say AI, but looking at camera systems, we have surveillance cameras and other things like that all around, and how we can utilize that to pick up near misses, because there's a lot of near misses or a lot of minor injuries that we don't see out there. But also that gives us good data to how do we prevent injuries that could have happened in those type of events. I also like wearable technology. I've been using wearable sensors on some of our workers on cattle feed yards to look at what type of heat and dust and other types of noise exposures that they may, what type of environmental stuff may be influencing their health and their safety out there. So utilizing that research, and then we can help modify whether it's the time of day we do tasks. So Right. We're out of the heat or we're out of the dust, mm-hmm. or that we provide them with personal protective equipment to protect them from, say, the noise hazards they might be exposed to. So our research takes into practice some of those health hazards that we may see out there, or safety hazards. Traditionally, we just looked at who was dying and then maybe who had severe injuries. Now we can look at some of those health impacts because of some of the research tools we have, and translate that into better practices for keeping our workers safe and healthy when they're out there in the field.
That's really interesting. Eric, you spoke before we came on, you attended one of the trainings from Aaron before, and you made a point that you found it really good. And I got inherent in that is that did you found that it was really applied? And I think it was a really good example because obviously Aaron's work is very evidence-based and stuff like that, but just because something is evidence-based doesn't necessarily mean that it applies to the reality of how people can operationalize that evidence. So I'm just wondering from your experience about, upskilling and stuff like that, and how do those things relate to practice, and then from your educational side of things, transferring that to farmers. Does that make sense?
I mean, the big thing, there was a lot of good takeaways from Aaron saying about like promoting that safety mindset, getting somebody on the farm to be dedicated to be that safety officer or that person. But like Aaron had a lot of good examples of, you know, with that safety mindset of trying to make sure practice what you preach. You know, if you don't want extra riders on tractors, you shouldn't be asking for a ride on the tractor to go from one point of the farm to another. You know, do what you want your employees to do. So, I mean, that's helpful. And, you know, I think a lot of people too, they're realizing that the safety aspect is really important. And obviously too, if we can get like insurance companies and stuff to buy into some of that mindset to maybe offer discounts to farmers if they do have a good safety plan in place to help with their premiums and stuff.
That makes sense.
I mean, there's a lot of good things. Like I said, you know, getting the kids involved and having good evidence-based, you know, case studies to refer. You know I had a farm where we did some safety training, and the hose line break video that was done at the Manure Expo in Wisconsin, they had asked, you know, the farmer had asked, because every year he has a good group of employees, so he doesn't have a high turnaround. So he's like, what can we do to keep my employees engaged into your presentation every year? So he asked, he's like, do you have that video? I'm like, yeah. So I went with it. I showed the video, and his whole point was, well, this is why I don't want you guys congregating around the frac tank when we're pumping manures, because if one of these hoses breaks.
Yeah, you
know, that was a good way to look at some of that stuff too.
Right, right. So much of it seems to me to come back to like that, you know, that social, that cultural aspect of it, or you might like that socialization aspect or normalizing things. You know, it's like if you're socialized to cigarette smoking, you're more likely to be a cigarette smoker. I think Marion, because you deal with obviously a lot of people on in Sunnyside Farm now at the moment, and you're trying to be that link or bridge between some of these programs and some of this work and the culture around that. I don't know if you want to speak to that. And obviously, there's various. I'm sure like there's language dynamics associated, that there's cultural dynamics associated with that. I don't know if you just want to speak to that reality.
Yeah, it's a huge part. About, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, the owners made a big initiative and spent a lot of time on the values of the farm and thinking about how we want to do things, why we do it, you know, how can we accomplish this? And they came up with 6 words that we use all the time. And they're basically our values. And it's nothing epic. It's, you know, things that are important to the farm, but to give you an example, we talk about respect, and we talk about integrity, doing the right thing. If it feels wrong, it probably is. And excellence, you know, one of the key points of, you know, safety is you really do a pretty good job, because everybody needs to go home, you know, 10 fingers and 10 toes every night. So we talk about it openly all the time. It works from a business perspective and from a safety perspective, from a work ethic and a, you know, kind of human resource part. But it's been so powerful that it's actually helped our managers feel more comfortable talking about some things. So one of the things that I was thinking about when both Aaron and Eric were talking, teaching employees to teach others is really valuable. So the most powerful trainings that we do are not sitting an employee or a group of people in front of a video about, you know, parlor safety or something. Mm-hmm. It's having an employee work with a newer employee and help them and show them where the safety shutoffs are. And if you don't do, this is what, you know, needs to happen. And that's just pays huge dividends. And then it empowers the employee to feel comfortable to help people all the time. Cause, you know, safety, it's not just one day a month with a meeting with your team. It's every minute of every work day. That's a big part of the culture. The other thing that I think about a lot is I can't explain the emotional side of when somebody gets hurt or seriously injured until you have to live it. And And it's really, you know, something that hits kind of really close to home when, mm-hmm. when you're holding an employee's hand in the ER because they're scared and they're, you know, they're really injured. And it just, it's just that part of it, you know, no business owner, no farmer, no employee or manager, can kind of relate to that. And it's, I think it's something that, you know, if we can help people understand that that emotional side, you know, it sounds all touchy feely in mm-hmm. farming, but it's just a big part of, you know, what we do. We talk about safety with the people we work with because we really like them, you know, mm-hmm. and it's not that, mm-hmm. it's not that, you know, here are the rules and we got to do this and this. It's because there's some huge, you know, emotional reasons why we have to do this. And I think you can really connect with employees that way. I think it helps. Mm-hmm. But it might be something where there's some room for, you know, improvement too. Nice. Just the nature of the beast with, like you mentioned, cultures and different generations and everything. So, I don't know if that answers your question or not.
No, it does. It absolutely does. And it's the reality of the thing because everything's okay until it's not okay. And that landscape can change like that. You know what I mean? And then like culture is this kind of ever evolving thing. And it's interesting that you meant about, the kind of peer to peer or employee to employee. That was reading recently about, the power of like horizontal learning as opposed to like vertical learning from like, educators or whatever hitting it down, but like when it comes at like a kind of a level playing field or the people that embody the culture, you know, and that's an everyday thing. I want to bring up one topic that slightly came up earlier on about like the advancements and stuff like that, and the question that. And cause, like this isn't my area. My area is more on the mental health side of things. But one of the things that is that I'm curious about is as things evolve, does it make it more inclusive or exclusive? Because obviously you're talking about technology and mechanization, and these things come at a cost. And how has that shaped the landscape of what people, what's accessible to people? Because obviously I know like these things they really help, but has it been even the experience, I suppose, and what's the response?
Yeah, so I'm thinking of this from two different ways. Me as the researcher, it's made things more inclusive. You know, I grew up in an ag engineering department where we were engineers. We didn't think about people's feelings and all that kind of stuff. Now that I'm in a college of public health, it helps me see better that those interdisciplinary projects include more people. We have cultural anthropologists on our projects now that go out and do, like Marianne said, the job shadowing stuff, the parallel learning, like you said, or the same level learning. So from a research and education side of it, I think we're including more people in farm safety now, more in agricultural safety and health. Although Marianne also said about the facilities, right? So our cattle handling facilities or other machinery we may have. Some of the times, and I think even Eric hit on this, if it's an old piece of equipment and maybe less safe, but it still works, we're going to keep on using it. So finances have a little bit to do with it. I have the opportunity to help pay for stuff for farmers sometimes to get their facilities or the machinery they use. But I'm seeing that with the new automated equipment, and I'm sure the dairy industry has been automated for a long time, especially with milking machines, maybe parlor robots, other things like that. So there probably is a division, or we do see a division with different size of producers. Sometimes the really small producers can't keep up with the technology financially. Mm-hmm. There are opportunities out there to purchase some of that stuff, but it still is, there's a big divide on, even if we think of the auto guidance in tractors, but we're to the point with that where if you buy a new tractor, it comes with all that stuff, whether you want it or not. And some people don't want it, but it's still there. So sometimes the industry is saying, well, if you're going to do any amount of upgrading to your machinery, whether it be parlor machinery or cattle handling, it's going to come with these features and you're going to have to pay for them whether you need it or not. So that might be creating a bigger divide as far as how people get that technology. I know with robotics, and we see a lot of autonomous equipment now and other things, maybe even the use of drones for various things. There is a cost to that. If people can typically upfront that cost, they can see some savings in the long run when they do that. So we try to help people with that. We've got a lot of great farm finance people at our land grant institutions or at different groups like Nutrien, I know, has a lot of good ones, and Land O'Lakes as well, and other people like that that help farmers justify and figure out how to do those upgrades that are going to be safer, that are going to be more automated, but also in the long run are going to help them and help them save money. So it's figuring out the process and helping people figure out that process to get them where they need to be. But there's still going to be some divides and some barriers, like all things in society. If we talk about automobiles,
it would be
the same way.
Mm-hmm. And just a shout out to the John May Farm Safety Fund here too as well. That's one of these great programs, I'm sure, very similar to what you were mentioning, that tries to help bridge that gap. And I'm sure it's one of these cost benefit analysis, you know, how much of a risk is this in your farm and how much, you know, resources do we have to invest in that? I'm wondering, Eric, then when it comes to your work then, and you're trying to train, you're trying to, you know, transfer this information or knowledge to farmers. And again, I'm sure it's difficult if it's a very expensive piece of equipment or something like that. But does your work center on the socialization aspect of it more? Does it center? How do you apply when it's such a kind of a broad landscape of what's, I suppose, appropriate for a farmer? And each, they might have different needs too as well, if that makes sense.
I mean, what I found, especially going out doing these John May surveys and talking to folks, is you do have some of the generational gaps, where some of the younger folks who are good with technology want to make some of these upgrades, but then some of the older folks don't want, it's been working the way it's been working for this many years. We want to keep it that way. We don't want to change. So, you really need to look at the operation itself and see, what they're looking to do. It's mostly, how we get onto a lot of these farms, is with that John May Safety Fund, but then there's farms that I work with that it's every year, like clockwork, we have to do the safety training. And it's like, well, what have been your issues that you've had this year? What have been some safety concerns that we need to look at? The thing is too, it unfortunately takes a tragedy in the farming community to kind of open everybody's, safety mindset. I mean, after we had that manure tanker incident last summer, I had a lot of people kind of leaning on me on, all aspects of it. Farmers, I know some people in the first response community that were involved in that incident, and everybody's like, what can we do to make this not happen again? To where even I know another manure hauler developed a, online YouTube video to kind of show some different safety mitigation things, that could be used to help prevent something like that from happening. So I guess you really need to kind of figure out what people are looking for when it comes to this. There's really no one way to cover it.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. I suppose there is universal challenges that by the nature of farming, each farmer is going to experience, but then as farms shift and change, there's going to be kind of unique dynamics that are associated with those. A question that just pops into my mind around this I deal a lot with mental health within the farming community. And one of the things that comes up is very relevant is redundancy and fear of redundancy, a fear of, not being able to make payments, the farm going out of business and that. And I'm wondering, does technological advancement potentially make humans redundant? And is that a thing that's happened with evolution, as evolution came at the cost of human dignity, in this sense? Is, if that's a good way of putting it or not, I'm not sure. But I don't know, whoever wants to jump in there.
Kind of a heavy question, Connor.
I'm a heavy person.
I don't know. I mean, I think that people who are involved in agriculture do it because they love it. And I think that the technology and the advancements, and the values, and the, you know, kind of the things that we celebrate as farmers are real. And I don't know personally, I don't know as if technology is like kind of eliminating all of those things. It just looks different. So I work for a really large farm. I'm not an owner. I like to call myself a farmer, and I'm proud of it.
Right.
I also, you know, I get to visit my family and, you know, seeing the small farm and production, as far as a way of life and the values that I grew up with is hugely rewarding. So, it just looks a little different. I'm raising a young family, and I like to think of them as being involved in agriculture someday, even though we don't, you know, have, you know, a couple hundred cows in our backyard. So, you know, I think it just looks different. The other point is a lot, you know, and the large farms are run by families too. Every single one of my coworkers has a family somewhere. So it's really a connection that I like to think of, that, you know, we're helping 70 people raise their families in agriculture. And, you know, if you've got a, you know, smaller farm, maybe you're helping two or three employees or, you know, raise their families. Or maybe it's just you and your family on a small farm. So, you know, those values, I don't think are going away.
Right.
I think that they're just going to look different. And I think we have to work a little bit. I think we have to change our mindset on how we teach young people and help young people be involved in it. Because you can get some, you can have your cake and eat it too.
Right.
So,
yeah.
As farms evolve and grow and change, maybe farmers can actually get something like, time off, you know, or something like that, which I think can be universally valuable to mental health. So, you know, so it just looks different. I don't have any scientific backing for what I'm telling you or anything. It's kind of just my own experiences. So maybe the folks who do the research can weigh in, but, it's just going to look a little different, I think, and still be awesome.
Yeah. There's a farmer at home, back in Ireland, that lives beside me, and we're talking about this, about the new, technology and stuff like that. And he was telling me, that it came in so we'd have more time to do all these things. And he said, no, but the problem is that we've had more time, now we do more farming. But Aaron, do you want to come in on that point? You know, that?
Yeah. I was thinking about that, you know, as you were speaking and as Marianne was speaking about, and I take it to the newest technology. So artificial intelligence, using ChatGPT to do stuff. I might meet with this guy on Friday mornings that's a safety manager at a liquid trucking company. So the bulk tankers that haul all kinds of stuff around, from hazardous hazmat chemicals to milk or honey or, you know, that type of stuff. And
right.
He's been teaching me how he's been using this technology to make his job as a safety manager easier. He developed a whole new safety program. They have a lot of problem with people not hooking the pipes up right, or, you know, not having all the connections right. Then they have a big spill and have to deal with that. And so they created a whole program, and he used ChatGPT to help him figure out what the issues were, what they need to do, and what's going to change people's behavior the most. So I'm getting a lot of good ideas of how we use that technology, but even back to, like I said, auto guidance. So we heard that when auto guidance on machinery first came out, it reduced farmer stress level because they don't have to stare at the crop line anymore. But then they figured out I can make phone calls while my tractor's driving through the field. So now I start multitasking, and then I get stressed out again because I'm trying to do two things at once. I still have to turn it at the end of the field, but pay attention to my phone call. So figuring out how to use the technology and how to help it, give us a break, like Marianne said, or, you know, give us some time off because we're using it, but using it efficiently. And I know enough from using ChatGPT that the computers aren't going to take over the world. They're not going to replace us anytime soon. But What Nebraska is using as a marketing slogan for their AI classes is AI won't replace you, but somebody that knows how to use it will. Mm-hmm. So understanding these new technologies and understanding how to use them, once you get beyond the point of stress from using them, my mother-in-law was a nurse, and every time they changed the software on her floor, she threatened quitting the job because she didn't want to learn how to type the new stuff in the computer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So once we get beyond the learning curve of the technology, it can make our jobs easier and we can figure out how to use it to reduce those stress levels, but right. It takes some time for that. It's like when we still had to set our parents' VCR time that was flashing on noon or whatever. Now we just took the clocks off of the TVs or whatever. But anyhow, understanding how to use that technology,
yeah.
Helping people use it, I think it can be in a good place. Chat, I like a lot. I've been using it. I just did a farm stress thing with it. I said, what are the biggest stressors on farmers? And it went through the normal list of the financial stuff and weather and all this. But then I asked them, like, well, what about chronic disease? You know, we know chronic diseases put a lot of stress in people's life. And it said, oh yeah. And then I asked it to make me a prevention sheet or something like that. And now it added chronic diseases as one of those stressors to producers and stuff. So we need to train some of these systems as much as they are
helping
us do things, but put good stuff out there. But I think we can use it. We just have to make people open, show them how they can use the technology and how it can benefit their work-life balance. So with all that said, our jobs are changing in agriculture. The tasks we're doing are changing. The generational knowledge we have, the interpretation of information that we get, the automated systems aren't real good at that. So we still need people and our thinking skills to help manage those automated or those new technology type systems. Maybe someday they'll be able to think for themselves, but I think we're far away from that.
That makes a lot of sense. I'd just like to remind attendees, if you've any questions or reflections or observations, we've covered quite a number of topics so far, but feel free to just shoot the messages into the chat and or any reflections or observations or if there's anything you'd like to add to the conversation so far, please feel free to put it into the chat. I think just coming back to the area of like research and stuff like that and developments, do you think it's like more of the same and distributing more of the same, or do you think that where do you see that more work needing to be done in this area?
Well, I think that, you know, interface with technology, we've got a few groups now looking at autonomous equipment or automated equipment. People get injured when things turn on when they don't know they're going to turn on, or things do they don't understand how the machine works and they can get in the wrong space. The engineers that are developing a lot of these autonomous things or automated things don't always understand the human interaction part of it. They can make a fabulous machine that does what it's supposed to do well. So I still think on the research and development side, there's a lot to do along that. Although we still don't need to give up our traditional stuff of human behavior, understanding human behavior, stress, other things that we've been doing for a long time. Again, the surveillance is more important than ever as we're changing the environment that people are working in. Understanding how they're interacting with that and what they're being hurt by. It might be different things than it used to be. You know, one of the mechanization things of, you know, the tractors, the machinery and all that. We talked about them becoming bigger and larger. With robotics, we might see the opposite. If we're not paying operators anymore, we might have more small machines running around out there. They might be out there at all hours of the day because they don't need daylight to work. So that brings a whole lot of other hazards to the work site that we may not have anticipated in the past. So the research, the development, all that stuff of safer tools, as well as I like to look at how humans interact with all that stuff. So keeping a lot of the traditional stuff we've been doing about safety behaviors, but also seeing what type of hazards these new environments are going to create for agriculture.
It's interesting. Marianne or Eric, I don't know if you want to come in at this point, but I'm wondering how is that, how do you think that's received from farmers when people are like talk about health and safety now? Like, we should tick this box now again, or is this something now that we're ready for and we want to push on with that? I suppose Eric, you see a lot of that, and Marianne, you see a lot of it.
I've seen more people, you know, like I said, with, you know, working with the John May Safety Fund and going out and doing these farm safety visits for these people on their proposed projects, you know, when you mention stuff to them, a lot of them, I haven't really had anybody give me a hard time when I make a safety recommendation. And, you know, the thing is we're dealing, you know, with the John May Fund, we deal with a lot of farms that don't fall under OSHA, but I think even they're even willing to adapt the safety mindset. Cause I mean, at least everyone wants to go home at the end of the day. And I mean, but kind of back to the whole mechanization thing, and, you know, and like Aaron mentioned about the whole, like trying to multitask and getting distracted. Now when doing safety talks, that poses a whole nother thing of, hey, well, you probably shouldn't be, you know, trying to multitask, and especially, you know, because when you miss a turn at the end of the field, or you're, if you don't know that field and you get hung up on something, you know, I mean, I watch a lot of YouTube, you know, and the farms on YouTube, and, you know, you get people out shooting YouTube videos while they're trying to, you know, do their work. I mean, so, I mean, there's distractions, you know, there. I mean, it's good because people are getting to see the day to day of what farmers do, but, you know, sometimes, you know, are they, you know, potentially putting their safety at risk while they're being distracted doing something else? But I mean, I think overall, I mean, a lot of people, you know, even they may not say it. I mean, they might even have it in the back of their mind of a safety concern or safety mindset, but then when somebody else kind of points it out, they're like, okay, maybe now is when I need to take care of it. But I really haven't anybody give a negative, like, right, why are you telling me to do this? And I think too, you know, it's all in how we present it to people, you know, right. And I mean, I always open like, hey, I'm not an OSHA inspector. I'm not here to report you. I'm here to help you and guide you so you can be safe. You know, these are all recommendations. They're not you have to do. You know, we give them a printed out report of, you know, what we find, and it's theirs to do with what they want with. So, I mean, I think, you know, people are being more safety conscious and safety mindset in all aspects of industry.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Cause I think, Marianne, like you don't want to have those sobering experiences before everyone like, oh, this is very important. You know,
so when we talk about it, to Eric's point, we try very hard not to talk about any regulations. We don't talk about potential fines. We don't talk about workers' comp. We don't do trainings just to check the box. We are regulated by OSHA, but we have to talk about why we talk about safety, and it has nothing to do with, you know, the regulatory environment, because it resonates a lot better with people when it's not all about the check the box stuff. So, and to the kind of the changes in the kind of safety climate, when I started about 11 years ago, there was a lot of, well, you know, I've been doing this for 40 years this way. I'm not going to change it now. And that kind of traditional, you know, you can't tell me what to do mindset. And now, right, employees come to me with a safety question and how to fix it. And it's like, cool, like perfect. Nice. Let's do it. And, it's just that change in kind of growth. Like Eric said, in the kind of the employee empowerment, I think is huge.
I think that, as I said, that horizontal approach and employee empowerment around those things is really important, and it's definitely came across here in that cultural aspect of it, to implement some, you know, the great developments that we made, you know, from a service provider side of things or research, but really applying them. It seems to be that kind of, you know, as you mentioned earlier, like Aaron, the anthropology in it, because it's not just like an engineering problem. Typically it's, you know, it hits many different disciplines and domains. We're just gone over the 45 minute mark now. I think we might just start to go into some like closer remarks and that time has absolutely flown. But Aaron, I wonder if you had like some, like, I don't know, final thoughts or messages for like the role of research and the role of that kind of wheel around, you know, in terms of like policy and practice or that, for you, if you had to, you know, give, you know, close a message around that and where your work sits on that and why it's, why it has a lot of impact and why it's important. Because we live in a climate now where, you know, this area and our area is kind of, you know, it's under threat in that. And, yeah, just wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, and you know, one of the groups I work with, Ashka, that was mentioned that did those Ag Sharp safety management workshops is one that is important to me because what it does is it ties us researchers to industry and back and forth because to be a good researcher, you have to have that industry tie and the boots on the ground stuff. You can't just be doing stuff in your own little silo or circle. So I really appreciate the opportunity to interact with whether it's the people in the middle like Eric that work with the researchers and also works with the general population. Our insurance companies are great partners with us. Our workers' comp carriers help us do some prevention work as well as provide us some data on the injury. So it's a good balance there. So I'm all about networking and working with other people. That helps keeps us researchers going. We are at a threat with some of our federal funding as far as the workplace safety stuff. And this is across all industries, not just in agriculture, but it's helping us think and diversify. Who else can we be working with? Who should be paying for this stuff or what can we do to make sure the work still goes on if some of the federal funding goes away? So from the research perspective, we're not going to give up. We're still going to find ways to interact with the producers and try to share our knowledge, what we've learned through the years, and continue to innovate with some of the new projects that are going on out there. Sometimes that's adapting to maybe it's avian influenza now, putting some proposals into use technology to monitor biosecurity. You know, some of those issues that are important to stop the spread of diseases where maybe some of the funding agencies don't see that importance, but we can still do that. But I can't emphasize enough the cooperation between industry and academia and how important that is. We used to have a very robust extension system through land-grant universities to do some of that. That kind of disappeared over the years because of a lack of funding. And now we're seeing a threat to some of our ag centers because of a lack of funding. So where's the next rebuild going to happen? I'm not sure. Maybe it goes back to extension or maybe it's nonprofits or private industry or something else that takes that over. So, but I would like to emphasize I think we do good things in our research and we can share good information. And we help move the field farther along. We oftentimes don't move as fast as industry does in doing things because we want to make sure we do it right. Not that industry doesn't do it right, but that we have institutional reputations, I guess, to uphold, but trying to move that forward. But I said it a few times and I'll end with that. But that partnership between academia and researchers at other places and industry, I think, is a critical part of keeping that safety culture going and to keep our workers safe out there in the field.
Someone explained it to me recently as that, so we're not doing things blindfolded, that we know that we can go about it and target the areas that need to be targeted. Eric, I'll just come to you there. If you've got any closing remarks from your side of things, from the farm service provision side of things, and obviously, you know, you've been at this at the front line for a long time.
I mean, my big thing I try to get out to everybody is we need to build those community relationships. I mean, like I said, I'm in a unique position. I grew up on a dairy farm as a kid, so I was passionate about farming. Probably would have been a farmer if my dad stayed into it, but life happened and we got out of farming. I went in the military, got in the medical side of things and, you know, started working in the EMS field and working with EMS first responders. Then kind of, you know, came across NICAM and, you know, the farm medic program and kind of found in my niche where I can kind of build some of those relationships between the ag community and the first response community so we can get some of those talks going and keep everybody, you know, safe so we all go home at the end of the day. But, you know, we really need to kind of get back to that sense of community. I mean, I see every year, you know, the students come into the classroom, they have very little ag knowledge. And like I said, I go back to that tragic incident last year. I had a student, I did an ag hazard presentation to a paramedic class and they ended up responding to a farm incident that was a fatality. And, you know, it kind of resonated where like, wow, it was basically what you told us it potentially was going to be.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's good if we can build those relationships early and get that safety mindset across the board to everybody. So we all go home at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah. Because it's kind of like a tug of war thing, you know. It's like you're in competition with, I suppose, poor behavior, you know what I mean? And that can easily slip in when there's too much of a focus on merely getting things done, I suppose, you know. So yeah, thanks a million for that. Just before I go to Marianne for the final comments, if anyone would like to put in questions or observations or reflections on the sessions into the chat, please do so. So Marianne, you're gonna close it for us. So I don't know whatever way you'd like to kind of focus on from the end, because I'm just conscious you're coming at it from so many like different angles and that, and for many years now.
I'll throw some ideas out there, and it's the kind of thing that I don't have a lot of my fingers in research, but just some ideas. Things that might help farms of any size, like if every manure trailer or manure pump could be sold with a gas meter, like, you know, part of the deal. When we do the John May or the connecting farmers with, you know, resources for improvements, having a list of contractors that could come do the work. You know, sometimes it's just doing the work that's maybe hard. You know, the intentions are good, everybody's on board, but we have to connect. You know, maybe a farm needs a safer electrical system, and finding a farm electrician is not easy, and it's getting harder. So having the people that can do that work, you know, available, that's another idea. The other thing when we're teaching and we're researching, and talking about safety is, you know, I think everybody's on board, I think, you know, and if we forget sometimes, I like to think that common sense is free, and that we don't have to pay for that, but we do have to use it. So like wearing your seatbelt is almost always free, and you know, shutting something off before you work on it, that doesn't cost any money. I don't want to lose the forest to the trees and not talk about some of those big picture things that are really easy, low hanging fruit that can save lives. So, that's kind of my, ending thought, but I also want to like give a big shout out for the team on this call and the people that have taken the time to join us, and the NICAM and the resources that we have are so valuable, and we're so lucky to have organizations that give us some of these tools. There aren't a lot of private industry companies that do this. So this is basically the group of people that organize this call that have resources for farms, and they're super valuable. So I just want to say a super thank you to taking the time and effort to keep us up to date as farmers on resources and new solutions and, you know, new topics to talk about, and just keep that energy available to farmers and employees that, you know, do this work is really helpful. So thank you.
Very, very well said. So finally, I'll just say a big, big thank you to Aaron, to Eric, and to Marianne for sharing your expertise and your knowledge with us today. And just to the crew behind the scenes today too, as well, to Madeline Zenner, who's the administrator behind all these sessions, to Alison in marketing, and also to Destiny, who works on the research side of things with me. Just a big shout out. And also to everyone who attended today. Today's was our highest attended session. So it obviously just goes to show how, you know, important this topic is to everyone. So without further ado, thank you very much. And we'll have the next session at the end of May, and it's going to look at migrant and farm labor health on farms. So thank you very much.